TalkLine Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
And welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages, for all mental health struggles. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, for a parent support group, an inpatient or outpatient facility, please give us a call. You can call anonymously, describe a situation, and we will give you a referral. And our number, our hotline is confidential. Our number is 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to write it down for yourself, a neighbor, a loved one, someone maybe you sit next to in shul usually. Our number again, 718-758-0400. And just a reminder that MASC has in-person and Zoom parent groups. So please think about joining a group if you have a child that is struggling of any age. It doesn't mean that it has to be a school-age child. It could be any child of any age with any mental health struggle. So tonight I'm very, very, very happy to finally have on with us somebody that I've really been running after, trying to get her on to speak about a very important topic, and that is Dr. Bracha Schneidman, who happens to work at Empower Health Center, and I'd like to welcome you on tonight. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for inviting me to the show. I'm so happy to be part of the wonderful work that you do at MASC.
Thank you. And doctor, is it okay if I address you as Bracha, as I know you and comfortable? Is that all right?
Sure.
Great. So, Dr. Bracha, you are a psychologist. You do psychology testing in schools. You see children at Empower Health. You've been doing this for maybe over 5 years, I think I remember you saying. And I know that you deal with a lot of children suffering from, you know, different disorders, including tics. And tics is something that it's not spoken enough about. We speak about anxiety. We have many shows on anxiety. And parents are seeing that more and more children have developed tics. And I'd like you to give my listeners a definition of what really is a tic, please.
Okay, sure. So tics are sudden involuntary movements or sounds that occur frequently. There are two broad categories of tics that we see, motor tics and vocal tics. Motor tics are muscle movements like eye blinking or shoulder shrugging. Vocal or phonic tics involve any kind of sound from the mouth or the nose. So that would be tics like throat clearing, sniffling, or saying syllables, words, or phrases. Many people with tics report that they experience a premonitory urge, some type of sensation often described as a tingle or an itch before they have the tic.
So, I mean, maybe we should give a brief overview of the various tic disorders in general, of what each one, you know, brings and how a child may suffer with it.
So there are actually three different tic disorders in the DSM-5, and a person can only have one diagnosis because there are varying degrees of symptom severity. Tourette syndrome, which is often referred to as TS, you know, some listeners may be familiar with that, is when an individual has two or more motor tics and at least one vocal tic, although they don't all have to happen at the same time, and the tics have been present for at least a year. The next level is the persistent chronic or chronic motor vocal tic disorder, and that's when an individual has one or more motor tics or vocal tics, but not both. And again, the tics occur many times a day, nearly every day, throughout a period of more than a year. And then provisional tic disorder is if an individual has one or more motor tics or vocal tics, but they have been present for no longer than 12 months. For all of these disorders, the symptoms must have started before 18 years of age and can't be attributed to any other medical condition or any drugs that the person may be taking.
So I know that what is the typical age for the onset of tics? I mean, and what's the prevalence?
So first I'll say that tic expression varies significantly. You can see all types of different ages of onset and different courses of the tic symptoms. But the typical age of onset is between 4 and 6 years old. And the peak severity of the symptoms is usually between ages 10 and 12. And symptoms do often decrease in severity during adolescence. For old people with tics, the tics tend to wax and wane, so it's common for them to disappear and then come back a few months later, or they can intensify without apparent reason and then wane. Tics are common in children, but they're transient in most cases. In terms of the prevalence, about 3 in 1,000 children have clinically significant cases. That means they qualify for actual diagnosis, but a much higher percentage of children have less severe cases of tics. And I will say that tics are more common in males than in females, so we do see more boys with tics than girls.
Interesting, that I didn't know. So, you know, there are kids before the bar mitzvah, maybe they're ADHD, maybe they have anxiety, and suddenly they're going to have a bar mitzvah and they're suddenly developing some tics. Can there be, are tics related to anxiety?
So I'll backtrack a minute just to talk about what causes tics, because I think it's important for everyone to understand that tic initiation is driven by biological factors. Genetics play a large role, and there's other neurological factors that may be involved as well. To be honest, we don't fully understand exactly what causes tics, although research in that area is advancing. But what is important to understand is that the reason a child initially develops tics is biological. Once a child has tics, there are behavioral and environmental factors that impact the course and severity of the tic expression. So what you were mentioning about the bar mitzvah and the anxiety, if a child has a genetic predisposition to tics, and maybe they had a tic that wasn't even noticed when they were younger, but then when they are anxious, the tics will come out more. People find that being tired exacerbates their tics, or being in school reduces their likelihood of tics. So different factors, you know, will impact it for different people. But anxiety is an internal factor that's commonly believed to exacerbate tics. So that is something that many people experience, that their tics happen more frequently when they are anxious.
And not only anxious, what about if when they're tired, you know, they don't get enough sleep, you know, stress, going to school, you know, suddenly going into ninth grade and having so many different classes. We used to having just two teachers, and now you have, you know, 8 and 10 teachers a day. Can that contribute as well?
Yes, 100%. So all those factors, for some people, will exacerbate their tics. Some people find that their tics happen more even when they're excited, you know, so before an exciting event. I've worked with children who had tics at the beginning of every school year, and then a few weeks later, when they got more comfortable and relaxed, the tics would disappear, and the next year they would see the same pattern. So that definitely, could play into it.
And those that are ADHD, I mean, are tics, can they be a symptom of somebody that suffers with ADHD?
So with regard to ADHD, we would call that a comorbid condition. So those with tics, specifically Tourette syndrome, frequently experience co-occurring conditions such as ADHD and OCD. So it wouldn't be a symptom of the ADHD, but it would be a condition that's occurring simultaneously. And I do want to mention, once we're on that topic, that research has found that often these co-occurring conditions like the ADHD are a better predictor of impairment than the tics themselves. So the child may be suffering more from the ADHD than from the tics, even though sometimes the tics are what's more outwardly noticeable. And I think that's important to keep in mind, you know, if a child's in therapy, when considering therapy goals, that it may be important to prioritize treatment of the comorbidities before even treating the tics.
Wow, that is very interesting, because I'm sure that parents, when they suddenly see that the child has a tic, they right away want to fix it because it's making them uncomfortable to see that happening. And we, like you said, you need to first fix any underlying, I mean, focus on, not fix, of course, any underlying issue before. So that's a very interesting point. We say the same thing on our helpline when it comes to calls from parents about their child, their loved one, is on drugs or alcohol, vaping. So right away, the parent wants that to stop, and we explain to them we need to focus on what made them go to the drugs and the alcohol to self-medicate them. Let's look at where that began first.
Right. So I think with tics, it is a little different because, like we were saying before, the ADHD doesn't cause the tics, the OCD right. doesn't cause the tics. They're just both happening at the same time. But I think, like you're saying, the more prominent problem outwardly is the tics. And like you said, because it's misunderstood and it can look funny, parents are uncomfortable. So their initial reaction is, let's try to get rid of the tics. When in reality, the tics may not be bothering the child, but the ADHD may be causing the child to not function well at school and not do well socially. And that's really where the priority should be for treatment.
Wow. So what about diet? Does diet affect the tics?
So there isn't really conclusive research on that. I know anecdotally people will, you know, share their own personal experiences, and they may have an experience with eating something or not eating something else. But in terms of the evidence-based treatment, that, you know, that's not really a factor that we take into consideration.
So how would you treat tics? What, you know, parents, they get frustrated, their child is suddenly, you know, blinking a lot or shrugging a lot, whatever it may be. And parents, you know, they want to say something like, stop already, do, you know, what are you doing? Try to control it. Doesn't that hurt the situation?
Right, right. So I will definitely validate the parents that it is frustrating to see, and it can be embarrassing because people will say comments, even relatives sometimes, oh, why is your child always doing that? So first I would say, if you notice what looks like a tic, of course it's always helpful to consult with a pediatrician to rule out medical concerns. And once you've established that what you're noticing actually is a tic, then it's the parent's decision whether or not to pursue treatment. I want to emphasize that treatment for tics is not medically necessary. Tics are not dangerous. There's no risk of any medical complications or anything like that. It's more of, if the child is bothered or if they feel self-conscious about it or if they want it to stop, then there's definitely treatment that's available. But it's not something that has to be done. If parents decide not to treat the tics because the child doesn't even notice or it's not such a big deal, then the recommended course of action for the parents is to avoid responding to the tics when they happen. Because tics are involuntary, the child can't just stop them by being told to stop. And if they're constantly told to stop, like you were saying, first of all, it can make them self-conscious and feel bad about it. And from a behavioral standpoint, giving attention to the tics could make them happen more frequently. It's very important for parents to create what we call a tic-neutral environment. Tics are not good or bad. They just are, similar to if a child has glasses or freckles. It just is what it is. And if a parent could get to that level of comfort and accept the fact that their child has tics and it is what it is, then they can convey that type of attitude to the child. It is good to have a conversation with your child, give them the education, answer any questions they have, and then, like I mentioned before, don't point out the tics as they're happening.
Which can be very, very difficult for a parent, like you said. You know, relatives could bring it up, And it is embarrassing. I mean, I don't know why relatives or friends and neighbors bring something up when, you know it and you see it just like them. So it's really just makes it so uncomfortable for the family that's going through this. Dr. Bracha, I really want to bring up something that I read about recently, and that is the electronics that the kids are on. So many are gaming and the iPad and the Zooming, and what it does with dopamine is I read that there is a big effect on people that have tics. Have you read about that? Are you aware of that?
So I've seen some similar information. I think, like we were discussing before, for every person with tics, there are individual environmental and behavioral factors that either increase or decrease the likelihood of them having their tics. And that's actually part of the therapy that we do, is what's called a functional intervention. So we can identify these factors and work with them. So people will report that when they're watching videos or they're on the computer, for some people the tics happen more, for some people they happen less. Sometimes if a child watches a video after the video is finished, then they'll have more tics. So I think it's important for each individual person, for the parents and the child, to identify these patterns and then work with them. So, you know, if you know that your child often has tics while they're in the car, maybe the child should listen to music to help them relax. Or if you know that videos cause your child to have more tics, that might be important to limit that. I don't think there's a hard and fast rule because, like I said, you know, tic expression definitely does vary from person to person, but it's something that should be monitored and kept in mind.
So just in case there are those listening that didn't hear, can you again share the brief overview about the various tic disorders, please?
Sure. So there's Tourette syndrome, or TS. That's when a person has two or more motor tics and at least one vocal tic for over a year. Persistent motor vocal tic disorder is when an individual has one or more motor tics or vocal tics, but not both, again, for over a year. And provisional tic disorder is motor or vocal tics for not longer than 12 months.
Thank you. So let's start to discuss what kind of therapy, if you could describe, is used to treat tics, please.
Sure. So the therapy for tic disorders, the evidence-based treatment, is habit reversal therapy. The acronym for that is HRT. And sometimes it's referred to as CBIT, which stands for Comprehensive Behavioral Intervention for Tics. The main component of the treatment is the habit reversal training, which teaches a child to notice when the tics are about to happen and then to use what we call a competing response to replace the tic. A competing response is a behavior that's physically incompatible with the tic. So, for example, if a child has a sniffling tic, they frequently sniff in from their nose. The competing response could be to breathe slowly from their mouth, because when they're breathing slowly from their mouth, they can't also at the same time be sniffing in from their nose. So what will happen is that whenever the child notices the premonitory urge, that's the sensation that the tic is about to happen, they would begin to do the competing response and they would breathe in from their mouth for a minute or until the urge to do the tic subsides. So in this way, the child is breaking the habit of responding to the urge by doing the tic. And over time, the urge becomes less strong and less frequent, and then the tics also decrease as well.
I'm wondering what school-based interventions are available for children with tics.
So for the school, I think psychoeducation is really the first and foremost intervention. Teachers, like parents and relatives, everyone else involved, should have a good understanding about the tics, and as much as possible, they should avoid giving attention to the tics. And if necessary, I think, in some situations this is helpful, the child's classmates can be given education as well, so they understand what's going, have to mention it or say comments or anything like that. I do want to mention, in terms of interventions, this is not specific to school, but there are medications that are used to treat tics as well. Medication is usually utilized only in more severe cases, but it can be used in conjunction with behavioral therapy.
And of course, we recommend that they don't get medicines from a regular doctor, but they actually have an evaluation so you can see if there are any other issues going on, correct?
Right. So you would want to see someone who is familiar and knowledgeable specifically about tic disorders as well as the comorbidities so that they can take the whole picture into account.
Right. And in general, on the mask, we say that for all mental health struggles, not to get meds from a regular doctor, your internist, your heart specialist, better be seen by a professional doctor that specializes, a psychiatrist, so that you're getting the right meds. And of course, never to mix meds without a psychiatrist on board and the pharmacist. Dr. Bracha, let's talk about resources for parents.
Okay, so I would point parents to some helpful websites where they can get a lot of important information. NJCTS, that's New Jersey Center for Tourette Syndrome and Associated Disorders. So the website is njcts.org. They have a wealth of information on their website. And this organization also hosts free webinars on topics related to tic disorders. They also have a variety of other programs and services. So it's really a great resource. They actually have a research study running with Rutgers University in collaboration with other universities. I'm looking at the genetics of tic disorders, so that's something very interesting, and you know, they post updates as the research advances. So there's a lot that parents can get from that website. Another helpful website is Tourette.org, and that's Tourette Association of America. They also have a lot of helpful information about Tourette's disorders and just in general about tics.
Thank you. Very, very important for parents to get educated as soon as it starts so that you can know how to respond in a positive way, more importantly, not in a negative way, which is very hard, like you mentioned earlier, for parents when their child is doing things that can be embarrassing. Dr. Bracha, can we just quickly bring up trichotillomania? I know it's something that you see and in many, many different patients of yours. And I'd like to take a minute just to speak about it, please.
Sure.
Thank you. So let's give the definition and what suggestions one can have in reference to dealing with a child with trichotillomania, please.
Okay, so trichotillomania is hair pulling. It's when a child pulls out hair from their scalp or any other part of their body, and it occurs repeatedly. Similar to tics, I would say actually trichotillomania is not a dangerous condition. It's not like, you know, a medical concern unless the child is swallowing the hair after they pull it out, then, you know, that could become a medical concern. But otherwise, it's something that just causes functional impairment because it could cause a child to spend a lot of time. They could feel embarrassed about how they look. You know, they could avoid social gatherings or, you know, social activities because they're embarrassed. So definitely can cause impairment in that way. And there are behavioral therapies available for trichotillomania in where we help the child identify the patterns of their pulling and learn how to reduce the pulling either by using environmental or structural interventions like covering the mirror if they always pull in front of a mirror, but also by using what I described before for tics, the habit reversal therapy. Usually when people pull their hair, they also have a sensation, some type of urge to pull before. So if they can notice the urge and do something else with their hands, for example, put their hands in their pockets or clench their hands and fists and wait for the urge to subside, they could thereby prevent themselves from pulling. So it's interesting that you're bringing up the trichotillomania because the habit reversal therapy is really used for both tics and trichotillomania because they're similar in that sense of it's a neurobehavioral condition that comes along with that urge.
Well, the urge is also you could pick your lip, you could pick your nails, your skin around the nails, cuticles, right?
Right. So all of those are called body-focused repetitive behaviors, BFRBs, and trichotillomania is included in that category. And again, the same treatment would apply to all of those, any types of skin picking, nail biting, or, you know, any of those types of body-focused repetitive behaviors.
And the earlier one treats it, the better off one may be growing up, you know, biting nails as a young lady. You know, it's not very becoming. So if they're doing it when they're young, you know, maybe it's something you should consider to look into to feel that, you know, make sure that they don't grow up and thinking, oh, they're just going to grow out of it.
Right. I think in that way it is different than tics, because the more a child, let's say, pulls their hair, the deeper of a habit it becomes. Tics are a habit as well, but tics tend to wax and wane arbitrarily on their own. So in that sense, a child usually does grow out of the tics.
Right. Right. Yes. Well, Dr. Bruch, it's wonderful having you back on with us. Waited real long time. So thank you. I know you're very, very busy. And kids today are full of anxiety, just like them with COVID. So I really want to thank you. I know it's the beginning of the school year and you are really overwhelmed with so many cases, but thank you very, very much to you and to Empower Health Center for coming on. Thank you. I hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you so much. It's really a privilege to join the show and a privilege to be part of the work that you're doing. So thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you, and I want to wish everybody a happy and a healthy new year. Let it be a year of health, for good health for everyone. No more COVID, no more Delta. Let us have only good news to share, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually now, hug tight, have a good evening, and a beautiful Shabbos. Thank you.
If your child is at least 12 years old, getting them vaccinated against COVID-19 will keep them safer everywhere they go and whatever they do. The COVID-19 vaccines are effective at preventing disease, and millions of adolescents have already been vaccinated safely. The city is offering $100 to anyone who gets vaccinated. Get your child vaccinated against COVID-19 and receive $100. Visit nyc.gov/COVID-vaccine.
Meir Panim Relief Centers in Israel help feed the needy, hungry, the elderly, the disabled, Holocaust survivors, and the working poor. In fact, Meir Panim receives an unprecedented amount of requests to give the absolute basics, such as bread, eggs, and rice. We provide thousands of hot meals daily, as well as grocery vouchers and support for those who need it the most. In the face of all this, an idea has taken flight. What if we could give Israelis a reliable and extended infusion of support? Enough so that they could really and truly get back on their feet. So today, I am turning to you, asking you to help us at Meir Panim every month. Can you commit to supporting us in the new year? It's appalling and shocking that there are so many people struggling. Visit mpdonate.org. That's mpdonate.org, and become an active supporter today to help end the endless cycle of poverty. Now, through the holidays, all donations are being doubled so you can make the greatest impact. You can also call 877-7DONATE. That's 877-7DONATE. Shana Tova from Meir Panim Relief Centers.
Don't miss the grand opening of Brunch on 12 at 5006 12th Avenue in Borough Park on Sunday, October 3rd. They have a mouth-watering menu of pancakes, create-your-own paninis and salads, as well as sandwiches, not to mention their top-of-the-line sushi specialties. Listen to this. Vegetable rolls are only $3.99, sushi rolls $4.99, tempura rolls are $8.50, and sushi chef specials are between $8.50 and $10. Lunch specials are $10.50, and you can take advantage of a full dinner for $18.99. So come to Brunch on 12 during their grand opening celebration at 5006 12th Avenue in Borough Park. Free delivery is also available. Please call 347-786-6737. Call for special pricing on their party platters as well. That's 347-786-6737. Open Sunday through Thursday from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. and Fridays till 2 p.m.
Being vaccinated is your key to NYC. People 12 and older now need to show proof of vaccination to enjoy indoor dining, fitness, and entertainment. Just show your CDC vaccination card, NYC COVID Safe app, New York State Excelsior Pass, or other official vaccine record. This is the best way to protect yourself and others. To find vaccines near you, visit nyc.gov/vaccinefinder.
Thank you for listening to today's episode.
Talk Line Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.